coaching. Okay. Duffy, it's a big part of your life.
Yep.
Yeah, I think, did you give up your day job to set up, you got this into pickleball, give up your day job to cook?
Not yet.
Not yet. So you not still yet. You still have a...
I still have a
quote,
real...
Quote, unquote, a proper job.
I have a proper job, but I own my own business. So right. I'm self-employed and it's a business that's very much virtualized. So I can dip in and out. I don't need to be in a particular location. I can do a lot of work remotely and a lot of it's done electronically. So
right.
This is why I ended up playing pickleball. Because right. I had the time in my day
yeah.
to run sessions at Dave Lord on a Wednesday morning and a Friday morning. Right. So I was there more and more. And then I could take the job on and running the actual sessions for them. So coaching is a side gig for now.
So did the desire for coaching come from playing pickleball and thinking, right, you can see this going forward, there's an opportunity here?
Well, I coached kids in cricket for... Kieran was 6 or 7. Took him to the cricket club. And said, if I'm going to be here every Friday night, you might as well get me qualified. Yeah. So I did my level 1, then I did my level 2. Kind of got into it, enjoyed what it was all about. Yeah. And then I got some coaching for myself. I mean, really random story. I got coached by Alistair Cook's secret batting coach.
Secret batting coach?
Yeah, he wasn't part of the England setup and no one knew about it. And before...
Was he an ex-cricketer?
He was. He was actually the son of the umpire, Ken Palmer.
All right.
So Gary Palmer runs a cricket academy and basically I did a session on the drive. It was called Four Angles.
Right.
And when we were talking to him, he said, yeah, Cookie's having some problems. I can fix him. I know exactly what I need to do. And then about 18 months later, a story came out about Alistair Cook's secret batting coach.
Okay.
Who was Gary Palmer.
Right.
But I saw firsthand what a master coach could do.
Right.
And it was like moving my foot 2 inches. A slight adjustment in my balance point and the difference that attention to detail had on my outcomes in a cricket stroke
yeah.
meant I understood from being coached what that mastery can do.
Right.
And it was a case of I started playing and I thought, yeah, I quite fancy learning a little bit more.
Yeah.
So I did my level 1 with Sam and Riff. So Seymour Rifkin, president of World Pickleball Federation, IPTPA's creator. So I did my level 1 with him. Fairly soon after I did my level 2, but when I met Riff and Sam the first time, I think they realised that I'd kind of had a background in coaching and had seen, obviously, my daughter's own coaching career.
Yeah.
Through her being coached by an ex-Olympian in her skating.
Yeah.
So I'd kind of been around those environments and kind of done a bit of reading on how to parent her better.
Yeah.
As a sports person and how you praise effort rather than outcomes.
Yeah.
And some of those things you find from those classic books that people read in, and they started getting interested in coaching, Bounce by Matthew Syed and Mindset by Carol Dweck, The Talent Code, those kind of books. Once you read those, you kind of get how skill acquisition and performance in high performance environments works. And it just sort of started off, I mean, I'm 3 and a bit years in now.
Right.
And it started off fairly small, 21 to 22. I just got qualified, did a few bits and bobs. Then sort of tax year 22, 23 was the year when I started to build a bit of a reputation, start to get some regular bookings, start to build a client base.
Yeah.
And obviously we're nearly at the end of 23, 24 and it's gone crazy.
And with like most sports though, there always seems like there's always not enough coaches or enough trainers. Are you finding that as well? I mean, I've been on your level 1.
Yeah.
Haven't quite completed
it. Sorry for hitting you.
Yeah. But you know, like you, I was involved with football coaching with kids and I like that, and I like the idea of moving, going a bit forward with more coaching. But is there's not enough, I gather, level 2 coaches in this country?
Yep, that we could do with more. I mean,
not to take business away from you, as a sport grows, there's only enough hours in a day where you can do
there
your
has
bit.
Been I have heard at times there's they don't want any more level 2, that they don't want a lot of level 2 coaches, and it's absolutely not the truth. Is that there's not enough of us to go around. We can't cover the country.
No.
There's only so far where you can go, and would I rather be coaching 20 minutes from home or 200 miles from home?
Yes, of course.
Because 200 miles from home is not an unheard of example for either myself or Sam or Thaddea.
Yeah, yeah.
Or Louis or Freddie or Jane Portnoy. All the guys that are pushing up in the twos and those sort of experienced players, they are going a long way at times to cover stuff. And we can get enough work close to home. The problem's been that obviously with level 2 is not easy. It's a big jump from one until two.
This was my question. It was always, so in a, I did a level one at football, and the going to the next level was, you know, you could do that over a couple of weekends, level one. And then if you wanted to become a level two FA football coach, you had to find 10 days, which was like two weekends and a week. And then you had to take time off work. So these things were never encouraged you to do them, because they weren't cheap either. So it was all about your sort of passion. And I've had a little chat with you about this, the level two. It's this element about having to be able to play these 26 different shots or 23 or whatever they are. But repeatedly for 10 times each or something, or what I'm saying is to encourage people to get into it and become more coaches. I just have an ethos that you don't always have to be the best player to be a great coach.
Correct.
And I know you've spoken about we had this conversation before about in America, if you're going to get paid to coach people, then you need to have the skill set.
Correct.
So, but where does that change, or could it change?
Question.
I mean, you really
probably. I need to go back to where we are.
Yeah.
And then where we're going.
Yeah.
So as we stand today, just in the middle of March.
Yeah.
We 2024. Just a timestamp. So hopefully this has been going on for a few years with your podcast.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah. So we have the Pickleball Leaders course.
Yeah.
Designed by Elaine Shallcross, BEM.
Right.
And basically she spun that off of doing some stuff in schools, which is essentially a low cost entry level qualification to get people playing pickleball the right way.
Right.
So that is kind of like your activator level. You'll get people going, get them started. Here's some fun games. Here's a warm up. Here's how to get people enjoying the game. Here's how to have fun.
Yeah.
Here's where you can take a little bit further. It's not a coaching qualification, not designed to be that.
No.
You've got the IPTPA level one, which is
the one you hosted.
The one I hosted, which is the initial phase into coaching.
Yeah.
Designed to cover 2.0 to 2.5 level players.
Right.
So one day workshop, half on court, half in the classroom. Trying to teach you the basic foundations of how to coach and then what you need to coach that's kind of different from other racket sports or other skills, because obviously the pendulum swing, the unattackable concepts in pickleball are fairly unique to pickleball because of the nature of the court, the ball and the equipment that you use. Then you've got level two, which at the moment is literally a skills test and an observe lesson. There is no education piece whatsoever to help you through that process. You can reach out to me and Sam will give you a few pointers here and there. But there's no formal thing you go through. It's just hours on court experience, learning the methodology. But everything that's in your level one enables you to do your level two if you do enough of it at the right level and understand the process of the coaching program, what the IPTPA stands for. And then there's the skills test, which is where people get a little scared.
Yeah.
And
quite daunting, I think.
It is, but I know how to train it, and obviously I was there and I did that, and I had no one to feed to me. I had no ball machine. So I really should do a video on how to do this. I really should put out on the internet how to train for your skills test without anybody else.
Yeah.
And essentially I did a lot of drop feeding, but what I did was I would throw the ball up in the air, move towards where the ball was. So rather than just dropping and hitting it, I'd make myself move laterally or forward and backwards.
Yeah.
And then I would hit the ball.
Yeah.
And I would train 20 shots and I needed to get 18 out of 20 because I knew that in reality I had to get 8 out of 10.
Yeah.
So I wanted to give myself a little bit of margin for error, put myself under stress that knowing when I get under stress on the day and the stakes are high, I'll be able to deliver that. And when I was looking at targets, everything was much shorter. So it's a halfway back in the non-volley zone to the baseline. So you've got to go 7 foot from the baseline. My lines were 5 foot from the baseline and I wouldn't stop. So I had everywhere, I had margin for error built in when I trained
Of course.
So that when things got a little bit squeaky bum time, I had no problems.
Well, it's a Johnny Wilkerson thing, you know, the more I practice, the luckier I am.
Yep.
Yeah, because actually it's not luck, it is putting the
hours. So that's where we stand today. But obviously I'm able to give you, I got permission.
You have got permission.
From up on high.
First.
Yes.
Yeah. What's yes, a pickle. Karen,
I'm going to spill the beans, but I'm going to be a good boy. So launching very, very early April.
2024.
Like 2 weeks time.
Yeah, we're in March.
Yeah. So
this might not come out for a few weeks, but yeah.
We are launching the pilot of the new Pickleball England Coach One education program. Wonderful. So what we've done is we've taken what was out there, which was obviously the IPTPA course that Sam and I are very aware of and been running for 2 or 3 years longer in Sam's case, that is the first, the most well-recognized, the one that's really gone everywhere around the world of the coach education programs.
Right.
And then seeing how that would work better for our market, because obviously you pay in dollars. It's not as clean as having it in-house.
Yeah.
For what our market requires, there's different things. We have a lot of people coming in from other sports. So time spent in a classroom kind of explaining to them how to coach, if you're an experienced tennis coach, may not necessarily be the best use of your time when you've got 8 or 9 hours with the two of us. So what we've decided to do is take it fully on court. So your entire day is on court. And what we decided to do was, rather than teach you the coaching skills separately in the morning and some of the technique, and then the afternoon is all about technique and practice, we've aligned a skill on court with a coaching skill.
Right.
So you will align a shot with feeding progressions, or we'll align the ready position with how to adjust people. So mirroring, shadowing, adjusting people by moving the paddle, visualization. So those kind of things are taking a coaching skill and put it into real life application straight away.
Right.
The core foundations are the same. We've got sign off from Riff that we can do this and we can use this technology. We've attributed that. We're just waiting for him to send his introduction through to us. So there will be lots of things that are similar, which means there's a direct translation pathway available for anyone that's fully completed their level one.
Right.
Because obviously the level one for IPTPAs, you must pass the
rules test online.
Rules and coaching test online.
Yeah.
So that will continue into the new level one qualification. There will be a rules test, a rules and coaching test. Obviously in the American one, they don't quite do safeguard in the same way. They don't quite do DBS checks in the same way. So there's going to be an element of requiring that.
Yeah.
So that if you're going to go and work into environment as a full coach, you need to have first aid, DBS check, done a safeguarding course, just to be doing it the way it should be done as a quality standard.
Well, if you've done them like for football, would you be able to translate them over like DBS checks?
It will depend on whether your DBS is enhanced and transportable, because a lot of those DBS checks, if you get the right one, can just move straight across with you. They're literally like a passport. But some of them are just fixed there.
What about the safeguarding for children if you've done that through football and things like
that? Again, we're all looking at that works out. I mean, there's going to be a requirement to re-qualify every 3 years on a lot of those things.
Yeah.
3 years on your DBS, three years on your safeguarding, 3 years on your first aid. That's just kind of a standard stuff you get in all of those sports. And that's obviously, we're ironing out the very fine details now. We've still got a couple of weeks till 3 weeks or so to the pilot's launch. So we've got to get that kind of dotted and crossed, the T's and the T's. But it's the course is written. It is done. All the photographs have been done. The graphic design is done. Some of the video content we're going to use outside is done. It just needs editing. So we're really on a great place. And what we know is that it's going to work for our players and for our coaches. So if you're a player coming in and you have no coaching qualifications, you'll learn some stuff that you don't necessarily know about the game, and you'll learn to coach.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a coach, you would learn the skills you need and you can take a little bit of an easier ride on the actual coaching side of stuff.
And as a pilot, what does that actually mean as a pilot? Who's it going to be available to?
The intention is it'll be opened up to anyone to book in.
Right.
And then what we're going to do is we're going to run it as if it was the real thing, because we think we've got it, but we are not too humble. We're humble enough to know we probably aren't going to get it 100% right the first time out of the blocks.
Never do you?
So there will be adjustments and changes and tweaks we need to make. But I mean, we've consulted people within our sport. So we went to Richard Millman, who's obviously based out of Cromer, does some commentary with me. Incredibly qualified squash coach.
Yeah.
I mean, he helped design the American squash qualifications. So we're like, Richard, knock on the door. What can you tell us? What did you learn? What went wrong? What went right? How can we sort that sort of stuff out? So certainly some of our vision for coach education in the future is to differentiate path streams. So it's not just you're a level one coach and you're a level two coach, level three coach. You want to have, you're a level three gold standard coach at getting people started.
Yeah.
You're amazing at getting people in when they're 2.0s to 2.5s.
Yeah.
You're the gold standard. That's what we want that kind of coach to be. But you could be a level three performance coach working with 4-5 is enough, but why should the performance coach be seen any more valuably than the activation coach? Because they're both doing incredibly difficult, important jobs.
Yes.
So they need to be equally recognised. So that's what we'd like to hope to grow our qualifications into, that different skill sets and different pathways have equal validity in people's eyes. Not that, oh, they're only doing these two O's, that they're not very good. No, they're amazing at what they do. And that's what, when there are people out there that are incredible at doing starter sessions.
Yeah, yeah.
But are going to struggle to deal with me if I want to be coached.
Yeah, of course.
So we need to value all of those people in our community. And then two will come and three will come. As soon as we've got this signed off, we've already got approval from Karen to go and do straight work on two. That will be more different than the IPTPA.
Right.
Because you will actually get some support from us.
Right.
But we know the IPTPA are looking to change theirs as well. So they're looking to do something different in their side of things. The skills test will remain, an observed lesson will remain, but we're, the intention we've got is to give you more help to become a level two coach.
And you want to encourage people to become coaches, not try and hold them back, isn't it? I mean, I know it's a business, but
in my vision, and I know it's the same for Sam,
we
would want to have 100% pass rate for level two.
Yeah.
And it's not because it's easy.
No.
It's because we've given you the right support and we enable you to pass because you're able to do the things you need to do. We want to support you to grow. The intention would be to have a mentoring process as part of that.
All right.
So you'd actually go away, you'd plan some lessons, you'd go away and do some, and then you'd get a support call with us. So, Andy, how's it going? How'd you find that session? Oh, well, Rob, I was finding this thing really tricky. Well, look, I've had that. What you want to do when you go back to the next one is just change this thing you say to them and say it this way and see what happens. So when you come to do your assessments, you've been given some guidance along the way. You don't come in cold. You don't come in blind to that scenario. You've got a much better way of coming in enabled, and you'll see the skills test early doors and you'll understand what the skills test is. And you go away and you've got time to practice it and you can come when you're ready.
But coaching the coaches, isn't it, as well? That's so important. And cross-pollinization, and I mean, you even get coaches like rugby going to football and football.
For example, what things
you can do.
Well, our other person that's signing off our course apart from Riff is a guy called Richard Cheatham.
Right.
And he's an MBE. He got his MBE for services to sports coaching and community sport. He's a senior fellow at University of Winchester and has never picked up a paddle in his life, but has worked for World Cycling in the UCI, Elite Performance Coach Education Programme, England Rugby, England Handball, England Cricket. So he knows his stuff.
Yeah, I was gonna
and
say.
What he knows about is how to deliver coach education. So he was signed off and basically said, it's refreshing to see someone doing everything on court, taking this approach rather than throwing people in the classroom.
Yeah.
So he was, we engaged him from almost the first steps, and I knew him through cricket. And I said, I'm gonna go to Cheats and ask him, would he be willing to get involved? So we've gone external, totally external of our sport. We've gone internal with our sport with Riff. We've got Richard from a side discipline that's also within our sport. So we really feel that we've put a lot of effort in to get external input to get this right.
So I'm very conscious of time. I mean, it's 10 past 12, by the way.
I've got time if you want to keep going and do a two-parter.
It's fine. I'm just trying to come towards wrapping up. So the future of pickleball, where would you like, if I'm still going in 5 years, which I'd like to think, and we have another sit down, and what do you think, what would you like to be talking about? Where would you like the game to be in the UK?
If I think about where we are now and what's going on and what's happening, one thing we haven't talked about is obviously PPL. So the Franklin Premier Pickleball League is obviously something that started up this year. Ed Hare,
you do a bit
Louis
of commentary
Leville.
On it, don't you?
I am the main commentator for PPL.
Do you need a help?
I get asked this quite a bit. I'm
available.
There are a few commentary things I've got coming up in not just PPL, there's some other events where I've been asked to kind of organise the commentators, be the main voice for that, which would be a lovely place to go for me because I'm aware I'm ageing. So if I can slowly transition to the chair rather than to the court. And
yeah, but pickleball, you can play it forever.
Absolutely I can, but if we get to a point in 5 years where it's televised, then that wouldn't be a bad place to be. But obviously I want to see the PPL to grow, because having been around that for the last year, seeing the growth in a game at that level from the first matches to the last matches has been incredible. The ability to play at the highest level in and amongst that has been huge. And seeing the change in the drafted players, seeing the growth in the undrafted players that have come in to fill in a hole occasionally,
yeah,
and the strength in depth there, it's really exciting to see where that's going. And it's only going to go in one direction. Next year, they're looking to bring in challenger levels, masters.
Yeah, I heard that. There's over 50s. And
yep.
Do you want to explain to people that what the PPL is? The Professional Pickleball League in the UK.
It's the Premier Pickleball League.
Premier Pickleball League.
Sponsored by Franklin, obviously, right. Pickleball England sponsor as well.
Yeah.
And essentially, it's a team-based event. So I've got one of the teams in there.
Right.
And what you do is there's a draft process. If you look at the Major League Pickleball in America, you look at the MLP events we do in England, it's a similar kind of thing where they appoint captains who then draft from the available pool of players to build their teams and then compete over a season. And it's normally two matches. In PPL, we get singles,
right,
gender doubles and mixed doubles. So from memory, there's six matches per round.
Right.
They play best of 3 to 15 with a freeze. Although the upcoming final, they're going to take the freeze away.
Right.
So it's just going to be a straight first to 15 race to the finish. Best of three. And essentially, you've got a very similar format, if you think about it, to things like the Southeast Pickleball League, the Gladiator League, a lot of those team-based events that we're running locally here and around the country, just at the next level on.
Right.
So Thaddeus playing, Louis playing, Freddie's playing, Molly's playing, Jess Wilson's playing, Pep's playing.
Yeah.
You're getting all the great and good from all around the country coming together to compete.
How do your sort of local club get to know about these events? And you talk about a pool of players.
Yep.
In most sports, there is talent everywhere. And how do these people are saying, oh, I didn't even know that existed. And so, I want to,
okay, so,
have
so
I season, got an opportunity to push myself, yeah, and be considered, yeah, or?
So season one's was in a bit of a bootstrap mode. It was to get it going,
right,
and it's happening and it's been really successful and the quality of play's been excellent.
Right.
And it was basically, if you were kind of in that arena as a player, you kind of knew about it. It was on Instagram. It was put out on Facebook. It was put around.
Yeah.
And it kind of got the people. I don't think there was many people that didn't get it, that weren't in the pool, that we didn't expect to be in the pool. So the people that you expect to be there were there.
Yeah.
So anybody that wasn't in there probably wasn't at the level we were expecting. But obviously that is a sport that evolves so fast. Some of the players that are coming in that were nowhere 3 months ago are coming in and it's like, boom, because they're coming from a racket sports background.
Yeah.
So we've got that coming into there. Obviously, they've announced season two. They've announced that there'll be the Premier level, the Challenger level and Masters. They've been seeking some stuff. A lot of it's being powered by social media, like everything these days. And then it will just be a case of entering the draft process when it goes public and then keeping your fingers crossed to get a pick.
This is a thing that, apart from trying to get kids involved, I said we're probably learning how social media works for the aging demographic that plays pickleball around our, yeah, areas at the moment, because a lot of them don't know what TikTok or Instagram is. And it's, yeah, actually, there's an education, because we are living in this world that's evolving where our kids don't watch TV anymore. They stream, yeah, everything. And, yeah, that's how you find out about stuff.
I think with a case of something like this, because pickleball is still so small.
Yeah.
Everybody knows everybody. So it was kind of like, if they're not in the draft, then they're probably going to start seeking them from the draft. And it's, where can you find the diamonds in the rough?
Mm.
And I don't think we're quite at that phase yet, because it's not mature enough. In a year or two, there'll suddenly be people that will spring up at the senior level, possibly, that you're not so aware of. In the challenger level and the premier level, they're going to probably pop up a little bit more often. They're going to, yep, be a little bit more finished articles because they're going to be younger.
Do you ever see that, though, or hope that you might be, look, there's a kid now at school, and right, and there's a pathway, you know, even a pickleball pathway for them to go all the way through the levels and compete for their country. I mean, is there a UK versus America yet?
Yes, there is the Atlantic Cup this week. I think it is, where Thaddea, Louis and James and Freddie, I think, have gone out.
Is that Miami?
That's Freddie gone. Not sure Freddie's gone. They've gone out to Miami, yeah.
So that's like the Ryder Cup, is it?
It is US versus Europe.
Okay.
So they've sent out Pialina, and I think they sent a couple, and Maria's come out as well from Spain to compete over there.
Right.
And basically they're competing against the next gens from the APP tour.
Right.
So most of those players were over for the English Open last year. So that's kind of out there. I mean, I was talking to some of the coaches on one of the level one cohorts that's looking to set up a junior program to build into a performance program. And it's like, when they're ready, can I send them to you, Rob?
Right.
And I'm like, yep, just need to find somewhere to coach them. But I mean, yeah, the best, I mean, Annalise 17 is the best player in the world. There'll be some kid that's probably never picked up a paddle in 10 years that'll be the best that they've ever seen.
Yeah.
We just don't know who they are yet. They're going to come out and do that.
Tiger Woods of the generation. And where
else would
like
I, so if we go back to the question, where else would I want to go with it? Where else want to see it? I want to see venues. I want dedicated pickleball venues around.
But limited to pickleball, or like, because it's a racquetball, maybe you could you have some table tennis going on, or padel incorporated so with it? Because
the concern
to get padel, away from this them and us sort of attitude. Or,
I think, obviously, there's this new design for the pickleball and padel court in one.
Okay.
My concern with that would be that will then create the division of them versus us. What hours do I get my pickle? Which hours do I get my padel? So where I would think is there's no problem in having facilities coexist if they are exclusive facilities.
Yeah.
When they are dual use, you start to get conflicts.
Of course.
If I look at David Lloyd's, it's badminton, pickleball, boccia, kids club, archery club, running around in your roller skates, getting the floors dirty club.
Yeah.
In the one sports hall. There's other David Lloyd's that have got a tennis court that's converted into four badminton courts, which is now pickleball.
Yeah.
So that's a different kind of proposition. And the more you can have your own spaces, the better it will be. That doesn't mean you can't have table tennis in a pickleball venue.
No.
Because obviously you can get two people into a fairly small space.
Yes.
Half a kitchen.
Yeah, half kitchen, yeah.
We think about that. So width-wise, but obviously length-wise, pretty much the same. So you can use that space on there. But I think if you have dedicated venues, then the game will grow and it will speed up. And then also it doesn't have that risk of, as it was said on that Zoom call, cannibalizing tennis. I mean, also you've got to bear in mind is that actually pickleball is generally played on badminton courts in the UK, not tennis courts.
No, exactly.
And there's a lot of unused tennis courts in a lot of places that could be converted. I tried to get one. I found a disused tennis court and I tried to get hold of it, but it was like the council were interested, but it's like, you've kind of got to take it on the money. I'm like, it's good for 4 months a year. And how am I going to
outdoors?
Make the, how am I going to make the model stack?
Yeah, no, because you've got to get the foot traffic through.
But if you can, if I mean, there will be some bold entrepreneurs out there.
Yeah.
And I know they're out there and I know they're looking and I know it's happening. And there will be spades in the ground that we haven't seen yet that are happening that we just don't know.
Yeah.
And there will be venues coming. And when those venues
exciting.
Come, the game will grow.
Yeah.
Because suddenly it'll be even more accessible because they'll be go to the pickleball place. Don't go to somewhere that's a school. It'll have an instant attraction because of that. The other thing that will happen is obviously money will come in because obviously that then commercializes it in a good way because anything that needs to grow needs money behind
it. Of course it does.
Otherwise, up until now, predominantly pickleball's been done for love. And obviously you think about Sam going pro in kind of consulting and coaching, Thaddeus being a professional player, Pay being a professional player, me being semi-pro, I mean, a pro as a coach, but not making my entire living on that. It needs people like us to allow the sport to grow. Otherwise, there won't be the investment because no one's going to see a return on investment.
No, of course.
So we need to start moving out of the sports halls, moving out of the schools, moving into dedicated facilities. They can still have all the clubs that run in the sports halls. We don't need to lose any of that. We just need to look that dedicated venues are a different proposition and can do different things and then can grow the sport. Look at America. America's full of park courts. That's their closest equivalent to a degree of our schools and our club system here to a degree, a little bit more open access.
Yeah.
Then you look at Lifetime Fitness, you look at Chicken and Pickle, you look at Smash Park, all these places that are just dedicated.
Well, that's what I was thinking. I was thinking like, they don't now with Top Golf, you know, like a facility where you get a lot of the youngsters can go and they can go and have a burger and play golf, simulated courses and, you know, and they can have a good night out and even take their girlfriends because they don't have to go walk around for miles.
I've always suggested there should be a pickleball singles night.
Yeah.
And it's not that you play single. It's not that you play singles pickleball. You actually go and do a dating kind of stuff.
Pickleball dating.
Yeah. Pickleball singles.
You heard it here first.
But there's most sports venues, if you think about the bigger clubs like your David Lloyd's, your Nuffield, your Bannatyne's, they're making money out of their food and drink and beverage offerings as well as their memberships.
Yes.
And the risk with any pickleball centre is obviously you're paying for square footage.
Yeah.
And how can I make the revenue from that square footage?
Yeah.
And often food and beverage is a great way of building it in a club shop is a great way of doing that.
Yeah.
Subletting spaces is a great way of doing that. And then you've got the pickleball offering as well. And the more you can wrap around the pickleball, the more you can attract someone. I mean, for me, what I would love to see is all these disused big stores sitting on retail parks that are empty, owned by British Land, that no one's doing anything with. They're just derelict, with a Starbucks, Costa or other coffee brands are available in the front as a little booth thing that's part of the pickleball center. So the actual food and beverage offering is in the center, and that draws to passing trading to the coffee place on the retail park.
Yeah.
What's that thing going on in there? That looks quite good fun. I can see lots of families playing together.
Yeah.
I can see lots of people having fun and enjoying that. That looks quite good fun and quite easy to pick up. Why don't I have a go?
Yeah.
So you're sort of attracting people in. I think part of the change we're going to find in the UK is obviously the costs of those venues. And the cheaper venues tend to be in industrial estates.
Yeah.
So you don't get the passing footfall.
No.
And trying to solve that solution is going to be tricky for the UK. But
we have a bureaucracy problem, don't we, with planning and all sorts. You know, just you can't just go and buy a piece of land and build your own house. You know, all the good lands are owned by all the big builders. And that's got to change that philosophy in this country to allow things like that to happen.
But stuff will come.
Of course it will, because they will, like you said, there will be ballsy entrepreneurs.
Mike Lynch in Telford has proved it can happen.
Yeah.
He can make it work. He's also willing to share that knowledge. Obviously, he's doing a course, so you can sign up and pay for how we did it and how you can do it.
Yeah.
So it's definitely a thing that can exist. And now it's just a case of where's the next one and the next one and the next one until you hit, oh, well, actually, this is a business model that I can put in X tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, and I can pull out X tens and hundreds or thousands of pounds out, and it just becomes a franchisable, replicable model.
And there's so much can go with it, because I don't know if you're aware, my wife, she's a sports remedial massage therapist, and she's amazed really at the lack of rehab or actually how people look after themselves. I mean, the warming up, I mean, it's, you don't see it at tournaments. People turn up and they just get on, and there's a lot of people carrying lots of injuries and stuff. And, you know, we're looking at things for her to get involved with pickleball, because there is such an opportunity to help people as well.
If she needs anyone to work on golfers and tennis elbow, I'm here.
Oh no, she's very good at what she does, and she's got a friend that they're looking at it. So I mean, I'll give her a shout, Balance Your Body, but she's on Facebook. But it's just there are often so many people who've got tennis elbow or problems, but actually they don't know what the cause of the problem is. They've got a problem there, but it's not actually there, it's other positions. But there doesn't seem to be, we at Fleet Aces have a warm-up plan that is on the site that everybody comes and we can use.
I can share for you a couple of weeks ago, doing a pickle leaders course in Swindon.
Yeah.
Karen asked, there's a relationship between GLL Better, the leisure centre chain,
right,
with Pickleball England. And she's like, well, we got asked that we need people that come in to do sessions that are new to the business, but we don't really know how to teach them. And what can we do? It was like a last minute thing. It was just an idea. It didn't go in. I said, well, why don't we just film one of us doing one of the courses, and then we can pull content out of it?
Yeah, yeah.
So actually what happened was, okay, let's invest a little bit of money in Pickleball England. So in the new coach education program, when it's signed off and edited, there will be a pickleball warm-up, both dynamic and static, of me on camera leading that in a session for a pickleball leaders course, which will also go into...
They're not finding a model, Rob, you know?
It was expedience and convenience. I'm not quite as bendy as I was a couple of years ago. I was doing yoga, but I was still able to get there. But there will be stuff basically from toes to nose.
Yeah.
So basically what we need to be mindful of is that in pickleball, a lot of our demographic is still older.
Yeah.
So we need to look at probably more of a static warm-up with stretching involved before getting dynamic.
Well, ours was put together with the help of a qualified physio as well in the club, and we had those conversations, because I mean, as a sporting person growing up, you used to cold stretching, and then there was a period when people said they frowned upon it, because you got to go and warm up and you got to run and get the blood flowing. And now we had conversations where they said there's no scientific proof that actually just doing a cold stretch is actually bad for you. And so it's, the sports science has moved on massively throughout sports, obviously. And I think that's, you need to be maybe warming up the right bits for your body for the sport that you're playing.
I mean, I'm always mindful that if you've got older people that they're coming back in for the first session, they may not have done anything. So I, my catchphrase, like, make sure you move within your own comfortable range of motion.
Yes.
A little bit of discomfort might be okay, but listen to your body. Pain is bad.
Yeah.
But
well, that phrase of no pain, no gain, there's a limit to that, isn't it?
It depends on what you're trying to achieve.
Yes, exactly.
And it's like your first pickleball session, you come out with a torn hammy. That's not going to be much fun. They're not coming back.
No.
You can't get them better if they're not coming back.
Hamstrings. Well, you've been running far too much if you've got a torn hamstring.
But it's things like that. So that's coming as well. So there's lots of things with the level two program. We've got some ideas and we've been kind of visioning the level three. And what we're hoping is that by the time level two comes to fruition in a few months' time, we can send people out there comfortable to go out and coach and potentially earn a living as a coach after a level two program, have that confidence level to go out and do one-to-ones, to go out and run some small clinics.
Will all that stuff be, so when if you were to set up a club, you know, there'll be that framework of how a club should be set up, and these are all the guidelines and all the coaching and all the
A lot of those frameworky things are kind of there.
Yeah.
And if you look on Clubmark, you can get that sort of stuff. And there's some model documents here and there you can find on the internet. And there's some stuff that Pickleball England would offer as well. That's not really within our coach education remit. Right. We are looking purely at the how to make people coach. How to run your club is a totally different podcast and a totally different skill set. Yeah. And obviously, I've been on the inside of that. Martin's inside of that.
Yeah.
Of just... that is a totally different way of doing things than making someone play pickleball better.
Are you excited for the future?
Yep, can't wait. I mean, there's so many things that are cropping up. I mean, I look at the opportunities that are out there and the connections you make with people and you're thinking, well, this is where I am now. What's going to happen in 2 years, in 3 years, in 5 years? We're at the point where it's only really just starting to get known.
Well, that was part of my motivation is of getting involved. You know, when you heard of the numbers, like I think Karen was saying, you know, registered is about 11 or 12,000, but, you know, we think there's more playing. And then and in America, what is it? It's like they say there's 9 million, but they think it's
36 million.
They think it's 36 are playing it. Next year, they want to be 25,000 people registered playing in this country. I mean, that's a very small number when you think of the population and the demographics, but it can only grow. And I'm really excited.
If you look at exponential growth, I think is the thing. Look at how it's doubling every year.
Yeah.
And with no real resource. It's being done by volunteers, by people that are keen. One club offshoots off for another club offshoots another club. Someone sees this and sets up and it just keeps growing organically. So it's not being artificially grown. It's just happening. I mean, Karen's always thinks about the Jackson song, Can You Feel It? She's kind of feeling that that's that tipping point is hitting.
Yeah.
And I can look at, just from my own experience in the coaching side of it, how the desire and the demand has grown from 24 to 23, from 22 to 23, just how it keeps going like this.
It's wonderful. It just brought back a memory because Sarah and I went down to Cornwall, we were in Polzeath, and we were parking up and we just got out and we looked, car right next to us, these two people got out, husband and wife, and went, we know you from somewhere. Oh my goodness. SCPL pickleball, what are you doing in Cornwall? And it was immediately there's a connection, and you just like, that's the wonderful thing. It's not just limited to pickleball, but sport in general. I found that through my years of playing rugby, that every year I'd go and play another team, and your guy, you didn't know him from Adam, but you had this healthy respect. And it's just that wonderful. I think sport brings people together. There's a joy that can be brought by just participating, and that reinforced it for me on Friday. It was quite cathartic and a really emotional thing. I think it was really great. And that young lad you talked about, the spin-off that's come from that. And I just think I'm really excited because my boys have been doing their sort of social media for a couple of years and they've grown quite big. And I just hope that I want this to be about the community, about pickleball, talking about pickleball, growing, everyone else's journey, yours, the next person, whatever. I met Lloyd yesterday.
Yeah.
And, there's a funny story there, maybe not right now, but, you know, the conversation with him, because he's a young lad who started up a business and, you know, his journey. I spoke to Lauren the other day and I said to Tim, I would like to get you on because you're a young'un and I want us from your perspective. And he said, well, I'm doing a thesis or a project and I would like to maybe talk about it.
Yep.
Great. And I think that's, we can get it out there to everybody and it'll be wonderful. Rob, thank you ever so much.
Thank you, Andy.
It's been a real pleasure. Thank you.